Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I've got 2 tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Lori from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are 3 flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Mark McHugh. I'm your host. Very privileged to have only one guest today. He's a very brilliant documentary filmmaker, had several projects out, but right now his current project, A Man and His Trumpet, The Leroy Jones Story, is going through some of the festival circuits right now, and really just getting a lot of acclaim, and it's really great to be able to see, you know, the story of such a great musician and such a great guy, just to be able to talk about what he's been doing throughout, not just through his playing, but through what he's been doing to help out New Orleans. We have filmmaker Cameron Washington on with us right now. How are you doing, Cameron?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on the show, Mark. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, it's a great story to be able to see who Leroy Jones is and what he kind of means for the New Orleans community as well. I mean, tell me, first of all, I mean, how did you come up with the idea of doing this documentary?
He's a fascinating guy, and he literally, you know, changed the course of kind of some of the history of New Orleans music. And so I'm a filmmaker. I'm also a musician, so I played trumpet. My dad actually played jazz trumpet in the Navy, so I kind of grew up just listening to jazz and playing the horn all the time, and I'm trying to think when I was probably about, you know, I listened to the old cats, you know, Louis Armstrong and Dizzy Gillespie and stuff like that. But, kind of as, you know, jazz had faded kind of in America and less people were listening to it as rock came in the 50s and 60s. So there was just less jazz growing around when I, you know, grew up in the 80s. And so, I probably was, you know, 11 or 12 when, Harry Connick Jr.'s album came out, and it was Blue Light, Red Light. And I remember getting it and kind of listened through it, and I sound of the band. You know, there was not really a big band playing at that time in the 90s like that, a modern big band that was playing all kinds of – that had their own sound. So I was just blown away, and then I heard this trumpet just, you know, screaming through all these solos, and I was just super impressed. And then to find out that this guy is just, you know – in New Orleans and playing and around right now in our time was kind of amazing to me. So I just grew up with kind of idolizing Leroy Jones and that Harry Connick Jr.'s band, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, just knowing the guys, you know, a very talented musician, you know, and one of the people that you kind of admire in terms of what he's done. You know, how was it for you to kind of approach Leroy and say, I want to tell your story?
Oh, man, I just got really, really lucky, basically. I was, you know, I had never met him. I had never, you know, but I actually play in the New Orleans band here in San Francisco, a brass band. We were down in New Orleans for Mardi Gras, and we were playing in this parade, and there was a parade close to us, and I kind of, like, glanced over, and I hear this. I just hear just this amazing, you know, this band, and I kind of glance over, and I start to see a lot of the members of Harry Connick Jr.'s band, and I see, you know, Lucian Barbran is a trombone player, and Shannon Powell, the drummer, and I see Leroy Jones, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's Leroy Jones, like, my hero. So I was like, let me run over and say hello to them and stuff like that. So I ran over, and we ended up talking. It happened to be they did this parade that was called the Crew of Cork, and it's all a celebration about wine. And so they stopped the parade, like, every 5 minutes, and everyone has to fill up their giant goblet of wine. So there's lots of talking and hanging out. So I got to hang out with them in this long parade, basically, and get to know them. And I was hearing all these kind of cool stories, and they were all talking about, you know, when they were young and blah, 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 and how they had met when they were all kids. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, I'm a filmmaker, too. I don't just play trumpet, and this would be kind of cool to capture these stories of how this band came together and how you guys all kind of, you know, did what you did and became famous and stuff like that. So, yeah, so Leroy was, you know, I like immediately just like, oh, man, that sounds super fun. So we just kept in touch, and I started going back and forth between here in San Francisco and New Orleans a bunch, and just started doing some interviews.
Was there anything kind of surprising? You know, obviously, you know, you're meeting a person that you know very, very well in terms of his music and maybe a little bit of his background. But was there anything really surprising that you ended up finding out during this project?
Oh man, tons of stuff. I knew glimpses, I guess, of Leroy, but to deep dive into his story in the band, there was definitely a bunch of stories and stuff that I had no idea about. You know, I knew of Leroy and Harry Connick Jr., and, you know, one of the first great stories he told me was about the Fairview Baptist Brass Band. And at that point in New Orleans, there was the brass band scene had kind of died out. And if there was a brass band, it was an older, kind of an old man's classic band, kind of. And so it was kind of, the scene was dying out. And it happened to be that Leroy was practicing his trumpet and in his garage, and there was a church nearby. And the preacher there, Reverend Andrew Darby, basically was like, hey, I want to start a brass band with young kids in it. And happened to be that someone who went to that church was named Danny Barker, and Danny Barker was this famous musician from New Orleans and lived in New York and had played with Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway and Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. And he basically was like, hey, I'm going to put this band together with these kids. And one of the first people they found was Leroy Jones, who was, you know, blaring his horn out of his garage at, I think, age 11 or something like that, and found him and put this band together. And when the time Leroy was 12 years old, he was leading the Fairview Baptist Band, basically. And that single-handedly, like, really kicked up the brass band scene, which we're all used to now and when you go down to New Orleans. But it really led to, like, the revival of it. And that original band had, you know, some of the, you know, spun off to do the Dirty Dozen Brass Band and Rebirth Brass Band. And there was all these famous musicians who were some of the most famous people there who came out of that band. So he really, even at a young age, was, you know, totally surprised me to hear these cool stories about how he affected kind of New Orleans music history.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. You talk about the idea that for a while there, it was very, it wasn't there. I mean, the scene wasn't as there as it is now. It seems like right now we're getting back to, you know, the variety that we have that, you know, some people do still like jazz now, and they're kind of getting back into it. I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of an interesting a part of it, I think, deals with technology and the fact that we can share music a lot easier, you know, via online, and there's more opportunities for bands to be able to share what they do and all that as well. A good part of it too is just the fact that New Orleans is is revival is starting to revitalize now after Katrina, and we see, you know, Leroy had a pretty good portion of that as well, and the fact that you know, the scene down there just grew out after everybody wanted to make sure that New Orleans was getting back on its feet. I mean, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, the idea that the jazz scene has kind of almost been reborn as New Orleans has kind of been reborn past post Katrina.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, it's such an amazing city. I think it's one of the, you know, best cities in the world for sure. And it has some of the possibly the best culture in America coming out of the city. So, you know, for the history of that place, and they've gone through a lot in New Orleans, but you know, it's been, you know, 100 years plus of them putting out really, you know, brilliant musicians. Like every decade, you know, you have Louis Armstrong, and then, you know, Louis Prima, and Dr. John, and the Neville Brothers, and Wynton Marsalis, and Branford Marsalis, and Harry Connick Jr. It's just for year after year. So everyone, you know, people who are New Orleanians down there, basically, you know, they weren't worried about kind of the city coming back, and all knew that their city was going to keep going and keep having this culture and music and food, and they like to celebrate down there. So, you know, Leroy told me some great stories of how, you know, even after, you know, Katrina, when some of the places in the French Quarter kind of started opening back up for people to visit, and, you know, you'd play at a gig somewhere and, you know, only 5 or 10 people, and couldn't get any food there because groceries couldn't deliver it, and only certain, you know, beers were available, and it was this very, like, limited thing, but people still wanted music and music in the streets, and they still, no matter what goes through, I think they like that culture there. I think New Orleans without the music is a different city. So I think that's gone hand in hand kind of with the kind of the revival of the city from Katrina. I think they're probably, you know, they hit a couple years ago. It's definitely a switch over to a big renaissance there. And it's definitely back. The city is back for sure. I don't think population-wise, I think they're still not, I think they were at 700,000 before Katrina, and they're like about 500,000 now, but it's inching there. So they're getting there, and the music is definitely part of that spirit and bringing back and giving people hope. And it's a great, great, great thing they have going on down there. So I have a fun time every time I'm there. When I get back to San Francisco or, you know, New York, wherever, it seems like a very quiet city when you're you don't hear that music outside, you know, 24/7.
Yeah, we talked about the fact that you've you know, you're a musician yourself. You picked up the trumpet as well. I mean, you know, what got you to do the trumpet? Was that through your father who also played trumpet, or, was it something that just came naturally to you? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had grown up listening to him, and, you know, my dad's one of my heroes, so just hearing him play trumpet was always like a cool thing when he took it out and played around the house. So I had messed around with it when I was young, and almost took it for granted, or was just used to it, or wasn't exciting to me because I just grew up with it. And so I think in like fifth or sixth grade, whenever we were able to sign up for the school band, they had an option of instruments, and you could play any instrument. And I, you know, for some reason I saw sax, you know, I think tenor saxophone, and I was like, oh, that would be awesome to play, and that seemed new to me. So I actually ended up picking up the tenor sax and played that through junior high. And in junior high, my teacher kind of figured out that I could pick up instruments quickly, so I was playing all the saxophones and alto and baritone saxophone. And then they had me on drums, so I started to pick up drums and trombone. And same thing happened in high school. They found out I could play a bunch of instruments, so I ended up playing all these instruments and different instruments in different bands. And then at some point, I think it was sophomore year of probably high school, it just hit me, and I was like, oh man, it was like, I had gone through all this, and I was like, oh, I really miss, I think I played trumpet for a jazz band for some show. And I was like, oh man, I miss this instrument. So I kind of got fully back into trumpet at that point for the last couple of years of high school. And just stuck with that instrument. So it's nice having the skill to play all these other instruments, because I do music producing, so it's nice to pick up, you know, a keyboard or a guitar, whatever I need, and can play stuff. But yeah, so trumpet has been with me for a long time. And then went out to New York and played there in New York, and it was a great opportunity. I got to see and do a lot of things in New York, because there's so much music going on, and you can be playing at, you know, a hip hop show in Brooklyn at 8 p.m. and then a reggae show in the West Village at 10 p.m. and then at midnight you're at, you know, St. Nick's in Harlem playing jazz. And it was a great, great instrument to have in New York for sure. So, yeah.
And relatively easy to carry on the subway going between gigs, I guess, too.
It is. I feel very bad for the tuba and the stand-up bass players. Get pretty, yeah, they got a bad, it's not an easy gig dragging those things everywhere. Drummers, too, they got to put up with a lot, carrying a whole drum kit around.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, you musician and produce music as well, but let's talk a little bit about your filmmaking. I mean, how did you get into filmmaking?
I had always been parallel with music. I knew I liked making videos, and I had made my parents get me a camera, and I think, yeah, early on in high school or maybe junior high even, and you know, I was just always, I'd call my friends over for a weekend and make them do dumb videos that they didn't want to do. And any kind of project I had for high school, I'd try to see if I could finagle my way to doing it in a video style, even if it was like a 30-page report. I was like, what if I do this as a documentary video? So I was always trying to get away with making videos of things. So, yeah, I think about... I just wanted to jump into it. I was kind of done with school. I know I didn't want to go to film or music school. I was kind of already gigging and making videos. So I think like a week after I finished high school, I got an agent in SF. And about a month after that, I was meeting at the same agency, was meeting a bunch of actors from L.A. and writers and stuff like that. And they were going down to L.A. all the time. So I... you know, basically about a month after high school, went down to LA and just started hanging out in the scene and working on sets and just kind of learning, picking up stuff on my own. So it was a fun kind of just exploration of the LA scene. And I was going back and forth between SF and there. Kind of the indie film scene was taking off. And so I had been writing some screenplays with other filmmakers down there and in SF. And I had worked on some indie stuff here. And at some point, I had a couple screenplays and there was one I really liked. It was like high school comedy and was talking with someone, one of my buddies in LA, and he was just like, hey, like, why are you, you know, here in LA trying to do this? You're from SF. So you're like, that's, you know, the indie capital, just go back and shoot it on your own. So right when that seed was planted, I had, you know, loved making videos, but that was my first, you know, feature film and feature comedy. So just kind of jumped into it and got a bunch of, you know, local actors I knew and shot all over the Bay Area. And it was, you know, I already had the bug already, but making movies is just, you know, a dream gig, fun process. And so that's how I kind of had just started, was just jumped into it, kind of messed around in L.A. and just kind of jumped into making movies and trying to tell stories.
Now, about what time was this when you made your first independent film?
This was probably around 2000. We shot in 2001. We filmed it, and about 2003, it took about a year and a half to edit. 2003, I think we finished editing and then started doing the film festivals in 2004. So
yeah, because
back.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. Yeah, it was an interesting time at that portion because I went to film school I had graduated roughly around the time that you were shooting. You know, I was graduating film school from roughly the time around the time that you're filming.
Gotcha.
And that was when non-linear editing was kind of getting into fashion. They were
yep.
kind of converting us over there to non-linear
yep.
editing as well. And the availability of video was getting a little bit better as well. I mean,
yep.
how was it for you to kind of get into that kind of space?
So it was really interesting because originally when we had tried to fundraise for the film, we shot like a couple scenes on 16mm film, and it was so fascinating that in those couple, that break between, you know, not the late 90s into the early aughts, that digital was coming around for cameras, and where we actually shot on PAL European style because it was 25 frames a second. They didn't even have 24 for digital yet, and it was the closest thing that looked like film. So it was this weird time where, like, we, you know, I saw the difference of, you know, what we were spending and how big budgets were for that switch for a shooting on 16 millimeter to, like, oh, we can roll all day and not have to pay, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of processing fee for film. So it was kind of cool to see it happen in real time for us within like a year or two of what was possible with digital, you know? And so, even at the time, I remember, you know, George Lucas came out and you know, was like, hey, you know, in the future, everything's going to be digital. And all these films, people got super angry with him and were like, film's never going to die. And, you know, here we are in 2018 and every, you know, theater has DCPs to project digitally. And, you know, no one rarely ships around giant canisters of films anymore and studios save way more money. And so it's been pretty fascinating to have this, you know, art filmmaking form that's changed so much within a short period of time, basically. So, which is, has been a good and bad thing. You know, we got a ton of content that people can make for cheaper and great filmmakers can do things. And we also have like a, you know, overproduction of stuff. So it's a fun time to definitely be in filmmaking and as the technology is changing and kind of riding the waves as they come, you know?
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I feel like old school when, you know, you see some of the more modern students not have to use film, or they don't have to cut, they only have to cut and cut reels at all and things in together. I mean, it's, you know, it's now it's all digital and all that as well. But just being a filmmaker myself, I mean, it's fun to kind of be able to do a lot on just on the computer right now, and just you know, I'm editing my own documentary right now too. So it's like, you know, I'm getting into it, so
nice.
It's a little bit more convenient. So, as well, I mean,
yeah. What's your doc about?
You know, my documentary is about the growth of women's wrestling on the junior high and high school and college levels right now.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's been an interesting year.
Cool.
It's been a really interesting year just because a lot of news came out about, and they're doing a lot of progress over the past year. So finished up. I think I have one more interview to do, and I should be out to festivals hopefully early next year. So,
nice. That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Good luck with that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
Cool.
I mean, you know how it is. For me, this was a year process, about a year and a half process to be able to do this thing. So it was, it was, you know, it was great to be able to do a lot of travel and to be able to do it. And I know that you feel the same way, just to be able to get to that point where, you know, you're finished filming. Now you just got to get to the digging into the thing as well. Did you do a lot of editing on the fly with this project, or did you just wait to kind of look and see what you had?
You know what? I did. I guess I would be on the fly because it was. I kind of when I went down to New Orleans the first time, in the back of my head was, tried to shoot as if I was not coming back there. So I had my list of things to go, and I was like, all right, what if I don't come back to New Orleans? I don't have the opportunity, you know? So I shot everything I thought I possibly could and had this extensive list of B-roll and interviews. And then when I came back to San Francisco and started editing, I kind of, you know, would go through and then notice that somebody mentioned a name in an interview. So I was like, oh, let me write down that name and like do some research. Or someone said, oh man, this funny story happened. So I'm like, oh, what's this story about? You know? And so I had this, all of a sudden what turned into like, oh, okay, when I go down to New Orleans to film next, like, here's this like map already of things that I either, you know, had not thought about or didn't know this person. So, you know, when I went back a couple more times, it's each time I would sit down and edit and I get these new almost stories that I had either missed or just didn't jump out at me, or like, oh, let's pull on this string and see kind of where this goes on this story. And so it was really fun to kind of do it as blocks and, you know, do a chunk of the movie, go film some more, come back, like, oh, what are these, you know, go back and film a couple another time. So it was a really great way for me. It worked really good for the way I did it. And I'm lucky I had the opportunity to go back a few times for sure.
Now, you know, talking about editing, I mean, obviously, you know, the music's got to be a big, huge portion of what you're doing in this project. And being a, you know, having the experience as a movie music producer, and obviously having a band, I mean, how was it for you to kind of, you know, go through the process of selecting music, or, you know, using music in your project?
Yeah, I got super lucky, first of all. because Leroy basically was like, when we started the movie, he was like, hey, you know, you have these are all these, you know, original songs and albums, and I play it or record. He's like, you have access to any of these for the movie. So I already, before we even had this beautiful library of just amazing New Orleans music that he offered to put in the film. So just on that alone was really, really incredible. So I had just this amazing, amazing selection of tunes to use. And then, you know, we shot about, I probably shot, you know, 10 to 16 hours probably of live music of Leroy playing at clubs and in Mardi Gras parades and at events and festivals. So I had all this really great music of just him playing live, which I use a lot in the film. I try to intercut the film with him playing, so you get this almost feel like you're there hanging with him at gigs and stuff like that. So I just had this awesome, awesome selection on the live music we shot. And so I kind of mixed the film with some, you know, some of the studio albums he recorded. And then a lot of the times, you know, you might see Leroy playing a blues song and him live in the film. And then it starts, you know, we still hear that same music as we go into a different section of the film and talk about different things. So I keep the live feeling going where you hear him playing live, and then that music still keeps going and some of the studio stuff. And then actually probably about a third of the film, which was super funny and fun in just New Orleans, but probably about a third of the movie is literally the music of New Orleans just in the background. There's a ton of times where we filmed and had a set place to do an interview, and there's just a brass band in the background that's been playing all day, or some drummer on the corner. And so a lot of times that we shot these interviews, there was just music going on the street, and we just left that in there, and has a really nice raw kind of natural feel to just hear the music of the streets there. So we had I just got super lucky with the selection of music between Leroy's albums and the stuff we filmed and the stuff in the streets in New Orleans. Was just, yeah. And so hopefully it comes through. I tried to put all three of those things in throughout the film. So hopefully it comes through, which I think it does, because every time I've had New Orleans people at the screening, they're like, oh man, that made me homesick, and I want to go back home to New Orleans right now. And so that's kind of one of the ultimate compliments for me, for sure, to hear that from people.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, like, you've been to quite a few festivals with the movie as well. I mean, obviously you're getting a lot of positive feedback in terms of the project. I mean, you know, how's it been for you to kind of go through the festival and festivals and kind of see the reaction of the audiences?
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's been so fun. And I don't know if you've done the process before, you know, but going to different cities, first of all, you know, I feel like different cities have different vibes, and the audiences are different. You know, it's really cool. I see it a lot as a musician, but it's cool that as a filmmaker to see the reaction and what people respond to in the movie in different cities. But I've had constant positive feedback. Everyone I feel like really, really loves New Orleans. Even people who haven't been there, you know, they're like, oh, I want to go there, or oh man, that seems like a fun city. So people have a very good, you know, opinion of that city. So when you bring up New Orleans already, and people are like, whoa, what's this? And then you have this cool story that's kind of a part of New Orleans, so they really respond to it. So I'm trying to think of, you know, when we screened at the Martha's Vineyard Film Festival, the Film and Music Festival, back in June, and we finished the film, and you know, the executive director was like, hey, everybody, you can, you know, stay for questions and answers of the film. And we had probably, you know, most of the audience stayed for about 45 minutes to an hour. I stayed and just answered questions, and that's like one of the longest Q&A's I've ever done, and people were just kind of fascinated and want to know what's happening with New Orleans and what's this Renaissance look like, and how is gentrification now affecting New Orleans, and tell me more about the musicians, and da da da. And there were just so many cool questions, and people were just fascinated. So it's been a really just fun reaction. And so for me, with people, you know, get this new name or you know, discover Leroy Jones and then start digging into more New Orleans music or him or Harry Connick Jr.'s band, or then, you know, discover, you know, Kermit Ruffins, and then, you know, discover, listen to Whit Marcel. So they can kind of, for me, dig into, start getting into to some jazz or New Orleans jazz. Like that makes me super happy that that people are kind of interested in this and to something they never heard about or would not come across normally. So I just feel lucky I got to film this story, and then just seeing this positive reaction has been really nice to have after, you know, a year and a half sitting in a dark editing suite.
Have you had Leroy out to any of the screenings at all?
We have. We got super lucky. Our premiere we did here in San Francisco at the San Francisco Black Film Festival. So he came out to that screening. So that was super, super fun to have. We did a whole did the screening. So he was there for the Q&A, which was really nice to have him there for the question and answer. And then right after the screening, we did a big brass band parade, basically, like right from the theater to our after party. So it was awesome. We just had a bunch of people in the streets of San Francisco, and then it's so cool to see people who haven't, you know, seen a New Orleans brass band in action, and Leroy just getting to hear Leroy play in San Francisco was awesome. So it was a really, really fun day and night, and glad he was able to come and make it work in his schedule, because he is all over the world all the time. So and then we got really lucky too for our biggest festival, the New Orleans Film Festival we're in. So we were screening there on the 18th, and Leroy is luckily in town for like that day alone. So we're going to have him at the screening in New Orleans as well. So that should be, we're very excited to have, you know, be in the hometown where we shot and invited to that festival, and then to have Leroy there. And I think we have actually everyone who's in the movie should hopefully be there. So it's going to be a fun screening and fun party.
Any other screenings coming up besides the New Orleans one?
Yes, we've got I guess it would be this week on Saturday at 10:30 a.m. We're at the Baltimore International Black Film Festival, which the opening night is tomorrow night. Sorry, I'm getting all mixed up. Tuesday night is the opening. There's films all week, and we screen on Saturday there, 10:30 a.m. So anyone on the East Coast, yeah, feel free to stop by. And then we got a week break, and then New Orleans Film Festival, Orlando Film Festival is that same week as New Orleans, but we will not be able to attend in person because we'll be in New Orleans. And then we will be down in L.A. in December at the Culver City Film Festival. So, it's been a busy year.
So hopefully maybe in 2019 we might be able to see it on some kind of streaming platform or a network or something like that. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that we end up getting that as well. So people that can't make it
exactly
out, they can go and see it.
Exactly. You know the drill. We will. We got a bunch of meetings set up in New Orleans, so hopefully we'll have some good news for some platforms and some distribution after a couple weeks from now.
I want to mention, you guys can check out the trailer and a little bit more information by going to the LeroyJonesStory.com. You guys can check out the trailer there and all that as well. And then I believe you have a Facebook and a Twitter for that as well.
Yep. The Leroy Jones Story, yep, on Facebook, and the same Leroy Jones, the movie, I think, for Twitter.
Else coming up for you at all, Cameron?
For the film is most of our Leroy Jones stuff is wrapping up now this year, which is nice because it's been a fun journey, and we're super excited to just kind of get it out there to the world. So I'm excited to make this, you know, the rest of the year for Leroy, and then I'm actually going to start working on my next comedy film, hopefully get that going over the next couple months and have that done by the end of the year. So it's been great doing a doc stuff, but I'd love to get switched back over into comedy mode. So I'm going to start working on a new screenplay over the next couple months, hopefully.
Well, I'll definitely look forward to it. Maybe we'll get you back on next year once the filming starts and turn the new project as well. And maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed that we get distribution for this for the Leroy Jones Story as well. So hopefully.
Well, thank
we'll
you. Yeah, and good luck with your
as well.
Good luck with your as well, and keep me updated on your film as well.
Okay. Yeah, will do. I mean, I'm in the midst of trying to start editing this thing, so it's you know how that is, but
it's a beast.
Yeah, it's a beast. Yeah. Especially considering all the interviews I got and all the footage I have to go through. Thanks for joining us on the show, and best of luck to you with the project. And like I said, we'll probably talk next year, hopefully once hopefully distribution comes out.
Sounds great. Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. It was nice chatting with you.
No problem at all, Cameron. You have a great day.
Cheers. You too. Cheers.
Bye. That was Cameron Washington, everybody. You guys can check out the LeroyJonesStory.com. You guys can check out the trailer there as well, and all the social media platforms. If you search Leroy Jones Story or Leroy Jones Movie, you'd be able to see that as well. Got quite a few people in the queue for interviews. I haven't got them set up yet. So next week we'll have a show. I just don't know exactly who it'll be. But we'll have something set up by Wednesday, so you guys can check it out. It'll be as our usual time, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We are just about celebrating our 11th anniversary of the show, which is absolutely amazing. We're getting there. We've got a couple more weeks. It'll be interesting to be able to kind of look back and all that as well. So we will be back next week at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll have, I'll let you know who we'll have on our Twitter at SWIV, and Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook as well. We'll talk to you guys next week, next Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll talk to you then.